sports talk in your midday from the 2015 Utah Sportscaster of the Year. It doesn't get any better. It's the Bill Riley Show, presented by Shields on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Bill Riley Show continues. Final hour here on a Thursday. O'Connell and Swinney will follow me. Just got a little news. Vivint Smart Home Arena is going to host the UFC. Its first ever appearance in Utah coming August 6th to Vivint Smart Home Arena. Sean will be fighting in that. He's a mixed martial arts fighter. Interesting. Hadn't been there before. So anyway, Jazz will be there for Summer League. Speaking of the Jazz, guy that was the longtime coach, front office man. I call him the ambassador of all things sports in the state of Utah. Yes. He's one of my favorite people, even though he tells me the first time he sees me ever, all the time, first thing he says to me, nobody's listening, Riley.
No, Riley, the thing I said to you, and it was good advice, I wanted to take the pressure off you. I saw you were nervous, all right? You were stepping up into the semi-big time, all right? And you were replacing a legend.
Marcroft.
Bill Marcroft. And all I said was, don't worry about it. No one's listening. You know, nobody's going to hear you anyway. But you have proved me wrong. I said this when we first sat down here. And by the way, this is Frank Layden. He's still down here in the minor leagues. So I tell who your guest is. But anyway, I did say when I came in tonight that you do a wonderful job. First of all, the cover-up that you do with the University of Utah is wonderful. I look at our local media, and I think to myself, did the Jazz buy the Tribune? I mean, my gosh, it's like the yearbook every day. And they don't do a bad job covering up for the Utes either. You know, and so, all right, I'll move along with that. I chose to live here, so I've got to take the good with the bad. But you are good. You are very good. And you have done a world. I hope that soccer team appreciates you. I mean it. You've made soccer big here. And I know it because, you know, our kids are playing and now there's enthusiasm. We've had good people on the team, not many disgraces or bad stories coming out. Soccer's pretty straight, pretty good, and of course it's the highest quality in this country that we're going to see for a long time.
Yeah, and they're bringing an Italian club in here. They just announced yesterday to play the Inter Milan, who's one of the world powers, is coming in here to play an exhibition game, that'll be a big deal.
Well, I remember when Beckerman came in here to play.
Beckham,
and I got a chance to meet him at the governor's house and everything. And, you know, he was a wonderful ambassador for the game. The team came from Spain?
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid. Yeah. And the place was packed. And that was a wonderful experience. I mean, that was like saying, you know, we're bringing in the Yankees to play the Bees. You know, it was a big event. And that was an exciting day. And I said to my wife, you know, I think this team is going to make it. I really do. And Dave Checkets, of course, went over there to be able to get the name because it was very, you know, Manchester United and Real Madrid. And by the way, with Manchester United, and this has happened more than once, I don't think I look like him, but I've been mistaken while in London for the great manager of
Alex Ferguson.
Alex Ferguson. People, I swear, people said to me, Coach, how are you? And I said, who the heck are they talking about? The guy said, well, you're Alex Ferguson, aren't you? I said, no, I'm not. You know, I said, do you think I'd be riding in the underground if I was Alex Ferguson? I'd have a limo upstairs. They go, no, that only happens in America. But, yeah, that's the truth.
I always say this. You love sports in general. You're just a sports fan. Did you like soccer? Did you know much about
My high school team in Brooklyn was city champions 3 out of the 4 years I was in. I lived in Brooklyn. City champs. I'm in all 5 boroughs. Yeah, we had a nice mixture of Latino children as well as Norwegians and the Swedes. They lived in the section of Brooklyn that I lived in. We were very intimate neighborhoods, and so we did very well in soccer. Also, we did very well in hockey. We played ice hockey at a very high level of high school ice hockey. So I was familiar and I knew the rules and how the game was played.
I don't think I've ever.
I might add this. I was up in the suite, you know, in a game with the commissioner and, you know, some other dignitaries and with Dave Checkets when he was owning the team. and everything. And I said to the commissioner, and these guys all wanted to listen to my words of wisdom. I had already spoken to the team and spoken to the coach that's at New York now. What's his name?
Jason Kreis.
Jason Kreis, great guy. Jason Kreis, great guy. Spent a whole day with him talking, coaching and everything and handling of people and what have you. That's Dave Checkett's idea. But anyway, what happened was I said, I think I know what the problem is in selling this game in the United States. There's not enough shots on goal. I said, people are used to hockey where the guy makes 30 saves, not three saves, 30 saves, you know, and anything. And I said, and in order to get that, I figured out the field's too big. By this time, they had me down as insane. This game is older than Christianity, and I'm trying to change the size of the field, you know. So I said, oh, I better keep my mouth shut, you know. It is an exciting game, and these guys are very, very skilled. It's wonderful.
You love basketball, but if I asked you in your heart of hearts, what's been your what's your favorite sport? Is it basketball?
It's not even close. It's baseball.
Same with me.
Yeah.
I love basketball, and I played it, but yeah. I played baseball, and I love baseball games, Frank.
I love baseball. Baseball games are long. There's no clock.
Yeah.
All right? You have to have many skills. You have to be able to run. You have to be able to catch it. And the athletes, they're getting better and better. I lived in Brooklyn where we had the Dodgers, the Giants, and the Yankees. And we argued all the time, who's better, Rizzuto or Reese? Who's better, you know, Campanella or Yogi? Or, you know, it went on. That's all we lived for. And my wife, Barbara, lived right on Bedford Avenue, which was where Ebbets Field was located.
Yeah,
yeah, she lived right down. She could walk to Ebbets Field. And I when I found that, I said, that's the girl for me. I'm going to marry her, you know. Yeah, yeah, baseball. And I like baseball.
Were you a Dodgers fan?
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure.
Still?
No.
When they left?
No. You know, no, it wasn't about leaving. When the Dodgers left Brooklyn, the world of sports changed. It was no longer neighborhood.
Right.
It was no longer city. It was about money, all right? The O'Malley's, you know. I remember Jimmy Breslin writing an article saying the 25 worst people that ever lived in the history of the world. He had Pontius Pilate one, by the way, you know. And he had, when he got down to 6 or 7, he had the O'Malley brothers for taking the Dodgers out of Brooklyn. When they left Brooklyn, successful franchise, because the city wouldn't build them an arena where they wanted it.
Right.
All right. They eventually built it for the Mets, and that's where they would have built it for the Dodgers. It changed the prospect of what professional sports were. All right. Money was the issue. It was no longer loyalty to the community or anything else, you know. And Brooklyn suffered. You know, they suffered an image and what have you. I've seen it happen. I lived in Buffalo when I was coaching Niagara for many years up there and see what the Buffalo Bills mean to a city like Buffalo, you know. It's, you know, big-time sports, people want to associate. Right now, I don't care who wins the championship, but in my heart of hearts, I'm kind of looking for two things. Maybe for Cleveland to win. Gosh, don't they deserve it? Their fans for years in
52
football.
52 years,
yeah,
Frank.
Yeah, and I remember when Bob Feller pitched for them. That was when I was a kid. And there was a lot of pride. You know, and Jimmy Brown's a friend of mine. I saw him on TV last night. Jimmy Brown and I went to college at the same time. Two different colleges, but we were rivals. We played basketball against each other. And so, you know, I think, wouldn't it be wonderful for the people of Cleveland to win a championship and be able to say we are the best in the world and have some pride? You know, I think Francona's done a great job of building pride in the baseball program. But also, how about it never comes up, but the Warriors are leaving Oakland.
Yeah, they're going to San Francisco
in 2 years. Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, where are the fans? Are the fans, well, you know, I don't know because I see what's happened politically. You know, people are angry and they're upset. And so they're going to bring in, a buffoon, Bailey the Clown, you know, in to run for president. So I don't know. It professional sports scares me for the lack of loyalty on behalf of the team to the community, the demands they make on these communities. And also the prices of the tickets. You know, it's a partnership. You got the owners who make an investment and run a risk of losing it, though it's not likely anymore. If your team is not drawing and you're not making money, you certainly can sell the team and redeem more than your losses. You know, when a team like the Clippers sell for, $3 billion or something? Come on. You know, you can buy a battleship for that. So, you know, it worries me that the second rung of the partnership is the players, and they deserve. They're the entertainers. We need very few of them put people in the place, though. I mean, I would pay to see Curry. You know, I'd like to go see him, but I'd also pay a lot of money to go see the play Hamilton, you know, or the Book of Mormon, you know.
I think those are a tougher ticket than even to see
they,
Curry.
Yes, they are, but you only have to see it once. You know, the other game, you gotta go through, you know, whatever they play, 180 games. You know, and they would play more. They'd be like the Harlem Globetrotters if the players didn't have a union. But anyway, you got the players who are making a lot of money, all right? They're part of the 1%. And then, of course, you have the fans. And the fans are hungry for happiness. They're happy for hope. You know, I went out with some jazz officials yesterday, and I said to them, what you're selling is not basketball games. You're selling hope. And, you know, we see it with the football. You know, what happened was something snuck up on us in the last week that we didn't expect, and we haven't reacted to it as well as we should have. When they went in the Pac-12, didn't make any difference to me, to be honest with you. You know, millions of dollars in new buildings and everything else, you know. Not, we don't pay half as much a thing to Camichi or whatever his name was that won the Nobel Prize. But the thing is, what happens is we have the league. I used to like it when we played Air Force. I mean, it's something. We play BYU. Now we're afraid to play them. I mean, I don't know. So, you know, I think it's important that you go and you have a good time. But we're buying hope, and we don't want to spend more money, all right, if we're going to pay the coaches millions of dollars, and that is going to come back to me and how much money I have to spend to see the Jazz or see the Utes or whatever it is. I want results. I buy hope, and that's what they're selling. They're selling hope. How about the Jazz? It's not like the Jazz are we happy to make the playoffs? We fired, what's his name, a couple of years ago?
Tyrone,
and we haven't moved up. We're in the same spot, you know. It's unbelievable, you know. And what happens is, I thought, all right, we got in the new league. It's overrated, but, you know, we'll be all right. We're football, we'll hold our own, you know. And the same suspects, USC, they cheat, so they're gonna be up top, you know. We know that. But in the other sports, you know, we're ahead in gymnastics. I don't know what else we play in that thing. But you know what? We won the baseball championship.
It was great.
If you had said that was from last to first, that this was the possibilities, I would have said, you're nuts. I would have picked that. But we know the guy's a great coach. We know he's a wonderful coach, and he stayed here. And he wasn't given a great deal of encouragement. No one said to him, oh, we're in the Pac-12 now. Let's build a baseball field on the campus like America tells us to do. Most colleges have a baseball field on the campus. You know, so what do? We play downtown. And so no one gave that kind of hope to him, but he got a scrappy team together. They won when they had to win, and I couldn't be prouder of them. The two things that stand out in my mind is when we won the Sugar Bowl, we beat Alabama. That was one of the great moments of my life. And the other one was when we won the baseball championship and went into the World Series. That was great. Bills are great.
I was lucky. I did some games for them this year, did some broadcasts for them. And I called that championship, that Sunday afternoon game, which was so great. And then I went with them down to Mississippi last week.
I heard you down there.
It was fun to see those guys because Bill's a friend, and you mentioned it. He stuck with it. He knew it wasn't going to be easy to build that thing, and he did. But to see it really is good to see those kids, the ones that got their heads kicked in for a few years in the Pac-12, to see that hard work, Frank. And you know this as a coach, as much as it's great for you to see those kids that put that work in and day out, that had their heads kicked in, that could have gone to different schools, to see that payoff for the seniors and some of the other kids was great.
Yes. In other words, this is what education is supposed to be about. The best don't always win. The richest don't always win. And it may be a tough act to follow. So, you know, now they're going to have a target on their back. You know, you come in to play this team, they're going to be saving pitches and stuff like that to go against the Utes. But Bill did a great job, and I thought that was an exciting moment that really didn't get the coverage that we should have given it. You know, we're still talking about what if, or we're off in the distance, and you know, and that's not what sports is supposed to be about. First of all, they should be fun. They should be for everyone, either as a spectator or as an athlete, and you should enjoy them, and you should represent your school well. Look at Stanford. Stanford. And what happens, huh? All right, they have a mishap, a terrible crime, you know, by one of their students, judged by one of their alumni, you know, who was a little while ago judging our president. And, I mean, you couldn't make it up. You could not make it up. And he gives him, what, 60 days?
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months, and he's going to
be out.
Too.
Yeah, he's going to be
60
out.
60 days. Yeah, I mean, and nothing that this poor young lady is going to be marked for the rest of her life, inside as well as outside, you know. And, you know, it's, but, you know, I get up every day and nothing surprises me, you know. What I try to have in my mind is seeing Pope Francis walk down the main aisle in St. Patrick's Cathedral, break ranks, and go over and kneel down and hug a child in a wheelchair. And then I say to myself, you know what? There's still hope. Not like somebody said, one of the leaders of this country's governing party. And he says, our priority now is to make this a one-term president. Talking about Obama. It was Mitch McConnell. And instead of saying, the American people have spoken, this is our president, and now we join together to make this work, to make our citizens safe, and to make this country better, and go on and on. Instead, he says our priority is to make this. You know, because I learned this a long time, Bill. I learned this a long time when I just left the day before when the planes hit the towers in New York City, the Al Qaeda and the ISIS and all these guys, all these nutcases. They're not, when they kill 1,000 people, they don't count. How many Republicans did we get today? Or how many Democrats? They want to kill Americans. Yeah. And boy, we don't get it. We don't get it. I don't understand it. But however, here I am. I'm an Irish Catholic Democrat living in the land of Zion. You know, I need to be institutionalized.
You've been here forever.
I have been here forever.
You made that choice, and you've lived with it forever.
And not only have I lit the why before a game and had a chance to speak to one of Lavelle Edwards's football teams before a game. A great man, by the way, a great teacher, great coach, but even a better person. You know, I just feel that we could live anywhere, and we've chosen to live here. We have children here. We have grandchildren here. And this has become home. And you know what? I think the key to this award I'm getting, and I don't look for awards. I don't do things for awards. Either does my wife, who does most of the work, and I get most of the credit. Barbara, my wife of 60 years, as of June 1st, said, you know, this is a wonderful thing. All right? And I look at the people that got the award in other previous years, and I say humbly, thank you. Thank you, BYU, because, you know, we're different. We're different in religion. We're different in a lot of philosophical things. And yet we're able to work together, and there's a mutual respect there that is so important for us to succeed in this community and probably throughout the country.
Frank's being named the Distinguished Uton. It's coming up next week, June 14th, down at Vivint Smart Home Arena. 23rd annual award. Many others have won it before him. But all the proceeds for the evening go to high school-based scholarships for seniors qualifying through community service, academic achievement, if they're enrolling in Utah schools. So
any Utah schools,
by the way,
not
Utah
BYU.
Schools. Yeah, it's any accredited school, college in the state of Utah.
I met at luncheon with the leaders of the BYU Management Society, and I saw so many bright young men and women out there in the audience, and you know, they were genuinely happy that Barbara and I were on the scene. This was sort of a preliminary to this award. And, you know, and I left there with the same thing. When I found out that 100% of the money was going to youngsters here in this community, they didn't have to go to BYU to collect it, all right? They could go anywhere to advance themselves on a college level. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. And this is the kind of cooperation we should have. You know, of all the things that Muhammad Ali said that were kind of crazy, some of them. But you know what he said? We have to be selfless and not selfish. Wow. You know, that's pretty important, I think.
Frank's in studio. We're going to do another half hour with him. If you want information, maybe you want to come down to the dinner. Maybe you've got a company that wants to buy a dinner table at the dinner. Simply call 801-707-7968. 801-707-7968.
Open your wallets. Give the money. It's for kids to further their education. Make them better Americans. Make them bring them up to their potential intellectually. And always remember this. It's a long time ago that a very wise man told me that you'll never see a Brinks truck in a funeral procession. You can't take it with you. So spread it around.
And in addition, as if Frank Layden isn't enough, they'll have Jerry Sloan there that night, too, doing a special tribute
to Jerry Sloan.
Who just got a big award, the award last night.
Yeah, 20 years. I mean, his award is for, you know, outstanding accomplishment in a lifetime accomplishments. And you know what makes it, Bill, so important, that award? It's given by his peers.
Yep.
You know, and Jerry was known by the guys who coached against him, that this was a guy that would do. He had his teams prepared. They were well coached. They would be tough, and they would give you everything you could handle. And Jerry, and now these same people are saying that this guy's the best, and let's give him this reward. And he got it alongside, what's his name from the Celtics,
Casey Jones.
Casey Jones, who a wonderful man. A wonderful man, a gentleman, and to bring the two of them in together, it's absolutely great and well deserved.
One of Frank's coaching contemporaries, right there. We're going to take a timeout. We'll come back. I've lived here for 15 years now. Frank's lived here much longer than I have. I want to talk to him about how he's seen the landscape of sports and the culture here in this city and this state change in his time. Talk a little bit about the NBA Finals. I want to run something by him. One of my many NBA theories and more. Half hour more with Frank Layden in studio. Bill Riley Show, ESPN 700. One of my favorites, Frank Layden in studio with us. He's being honored next week as a distinguished Utah gala downtown at Vivint Smart Home Arena. They change the names on these things so damn often. It's Vivint Smart Home Arena now. Dinner at 6 o'clock to 8:30. They'll be honoring Jerry Sloan. You can get information on how to get a table or get seats in there at 801-707-7968.
And honoring the Jazz, too.
And honoring the Utah Jazz as well. That's absolutely right. I want to run by an NBA theory with you. Society today is a whole lot different. People are quick to jump on stars. You build them up, then you tear them down real fast. And I don't understand some of that sometimes. One of my favorite players to watch today is LeBron James. I just the way he moves and his size and his power. I maintain in the history of the NBA, there have been three what I call freaks of nature, guys that you've just never seen anything like them before. A guy that was from your era, Wilt Chamberlain. Never anybody like Wilt, his athleticism, the way he played the game, changed the rules of the game for Wilt Chamberlain. The second guy for me was Magic Johnson, a guy you know, you sat in his baseball suite. There's still, to this day, there's never been anybody like Magic running the point the way he did. And the third guy, to me, is LeBron James. We've never seen somebody that's 6'9", 270, that could do all the things that he does. Now, people say, well, what about Michael Jordan? No. Michael is great, but there have been guys like Michael before, same body types that have the same, not the high skill set, but have played the way Michael has. But nobody ever played the way Magic had. When you saw Magic Johnson play at the Huntsman Center in that NBA, in that NCAA title game, and then into the NBA.
That was my first day in Utah. I was with the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay.
And I came here to scout the Final Four, all right? And, of course, they had it here on campus, which is the last time I think they did play it on a college campus. And I was anxious to see this guy who was 6'11" or something and could handle the ball and be a point guard. And he made a believer out of me. I said, well, I don't know if he can do it in the NBA. He did it better in the NBA. And he was a great decision maker. I think Michael Jordan is the greatest player I've ever seen.
Sure.
I think that he was a great defender as well, probably a little better defender than Magic would have been. But Magic could play every position, and he also could put his will on his teammates and even the ownership. I mean, he was like a guru who could just mesmerize a whole community. You know, I guess the boxer, Muhammad Ali had a little bit of that in him. And I thought that that he certainly was a great player. But, you know, let's put this in perspective. You're talking about a guy who's approximately the same height, maybe a little bit taller, and the same weight as Karl Malone. Handles the ball, you know, can guard point guards, can rebound, all right, and can pass, and, of course, can shoot the basketball and run the floor.
Talking about LeBron James.
As LeBron James. I think this has happened to LeBron James. I really do. I don't think he's had great coaching, all right? And I don't think he's been with great organization. When he got with Miami, of course, Pat Riley is a genius and what have you, but they had too many good players. And I think he became confused as to what his role was, all right? Don't forget he was still growing intellectually into the game. I said to my wife the other day, and I run stuff by her all the time, and she always asks me, you know, as a coach, what would you do? This, that, and everything else, you know. You know, we see these two games, games that 30-point spreads in the championship series. You know, this is like saying the World Series is being played, and every other day one team's winning by 20 runs. You know, it just doesn't happen. But anyway, I think if I were to suggest something to LeBron James, I would say get out films of Jerry West. Get out films of Michael. All right? Get out films of Magic. Watch them play and see how they could adapt and blend their game into the complete package. Right now, he's like a fullback. And in the third quarter last night, he attacked the basket. All right, fouls occurred, and, you know, he opens up the game. It closes in the defense, and, of course, then the outside guys made some shots. He's a bull. He still doesn't have the smoothness or the creativity, you know, or the flexibility of, say, Magic, a Michael, or a Jerry West, or what have you. I would suggest that this summer, just take films home. Yeah, I know he's a bright guy.
Yeah.
All right, and he was a good student and what have you. And watch those films and find out what those guys had. He's missing that. He's missing that ability to turn the game into a smooth, flowing game. We saw, you know, I spent a lot of time in the last few years with Popovich down with the Spurs because of Scottie being down there. And he has that. Popovich is able to convince his players, Parker and Ginobili and the big guy
Duncan,
that it's a team game and to recognize that it's a chess game. We bring them in, then we pitch it out, and make sure we give it to a guy to come in. If you can't make the shot, you don't feel good about it, then you move it to someone else. You know, unselfishness, as Muhammad Ali said, selfless instead of selfishness. And I don't think he gets it yet. He's a little more of a stand-up puncher than he is a tactician, and that's probably missing from his game. But he can play that sucker. You know, I'll take him.
Yeah, you think? He'd make you look a lot better as a coach,
well,
that's for sure.
And I wish I could have coached him.
Yeah.
I don't say, see, but I don't think, you know, in recent years, the guy that came from Israel that I know he played for.
David Blatt.
Yeah, David Blatt played for Princeton and is a very, very bright guy, and I'm not putting him down. I think he kind of got it, you know, the criticisms for coming over here and what have you, and the owners a lot of time, you know, believe and read the papers. And I think the kid that's in there coaching him now, he looks like he's shell shock. You know, it's basketball. Professional basketball is one of the few sports there is in which we can take guys. The Knicks did it. The Knicks, the richest franchise in the history of the world. I mean, they're like the Yankees, and they made the kid that used to play here the coach.
Hornacek.
Not Hornacek. The guy that Hornacek just replaced. What's his name? He was the backcourt man here, and then he played for the Lakers.
Oh, Derek Fisher.
Derek Fisher. Yeah. I mean, I mean, you know, that's like saying, hey, Frank, I know you're interested in basketball. How about coaching the Yankees this year? You know, come on. You know, you should hire people that have experience. Now, this young coach, all right, for the Cleveland Cavaliers, is coaching a guy who thinks he knows everything, you know. It's very tough, you know. I think, you know.
Didn't Magic Johnson do that, though, with the Lakers when he handpicked Pat Riley to be his guy?
Well, you know what he did? He got rid of the coach they had.
Paul Westhead.
I don't know. And it happened here, by the way. Did you ever know that? It was after one of our games. But I don't know if he got – I think he liked the idea of Pat Riley because Pat Riley was dumb. He hadn't coached before,
right.
So he could put him over here and think. He didn't know that Pat Riley was a very good student, and he studied the game. I remember being at a dinner in Long Beach and in Santa Barbara, and Pat Riley coming to me afterwards and saying, how did you get that technique of speaking? I was the main speaker. And I said, I don't know. I just did it through the years and what have you. And he said, and you know what he did? He went to USC, and he took public speaking. He went back to school. He admitted that he didn't know how to stand in front of people and speak. Now he gets $50,000 a shot.
Sure he does.
He does.
So, buys a lot of hair gel.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, he does, you know, but he admitted he had a problem. He even said to UB Brown, he flew UB Brown in to spend time with him. He said, I've never coached in my life. Tell me about coaching. And UB Brown, with Dick Motter and Ramsey and Jerry Sloan, are probably one of the great coaches of all time, Hall of Famer, and worked with him. And he was a quick study, and he became a good coach. And when he did, what happened? Magic Johnson became a better player.
Well, that's the sign, though, right there. You hit on something, the sign of somebody that doesn't quite know what he's doing, but he's not afraid to ask for help.
Oh, yeah.
He may not have been the sharpest coach around, but he was smart enough to know what... Go get a public speaking course.
He was the luckiest.
Go out there. Yeah, well, and he inherited it, too. Before we go to break... In your coaching career, in the years that you coached, was there somebody in the league you would have loved to have the chance to coach?
Yeah, Matt, I would have loved to have Dr. J.
Dr. J.
Yeah, I tried to get him. I brought him here. We had dinner at Larry's house. We offered him a big contract when he was right near the end. I convinced Larry. I said, listen, this is not the Dr. J that they saw in the ABA. Maybe he's done already, but he will have an influence on our team that will be very, very important. And I want to have him. I think we're on the brink now of just becoming pretty good. And if this guy brings his work ethic to us, I'll never forget this. How many players do this? Dr. J used to call ahead and say, how can I help you sell tickets? Do you have a luncheon I can go to or do something like that? Yeah, the guy, so smart, and I would have loved to have a chance to coach him and have him on our team. I think... And I'm not, maybe I'm a fan, so I have a right to think. I don't get free tickets. I don't ask for free tickets. But I think this is what's missing from the Jazz. There's no older heads there. There's no Billy Pauls. Billy Pauls, huh? People, was he that good? 18 years in the league, 18 playoff teams. You know, he never was on a team that was in the playoffs. And so, you know, Rich Kelly, you know, coming off the bench. You know, I think they need some older players who can balance, you know, and maybe whether it's a Dr. J or whatever it is. But, you know, isn't it funny that, you know, last night in the game, who comes off the bench to virtually win that game?
Richard Jefferson.
Richard Jefferson. Why? Richard Jefferson's been around so long. He's been there. He's not going to choke on the foul line.
I think you recruited him to Niagara, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I think I recruited everybody to Niagara. And a lot of them foolishly didn't accept. I tried to get Dr. J to Niagara, too.
Did you ever coach against him when he was at UMass?
No.
Okay.
No, I never did. I had moved on already. Or he had. I know he only played a year at the Mass and then went down to went to the ABA. I recruited him when he was in high school. He was from Long Island.
Right.
Yeah, Roosevelt, Long Island. And but anyway, yeah. So I think that besides having balance in who your players are, you can't have all forwards, you can't have all guards, you can't have all centers, but you can't have all youth either. You can't have young players because they may all grow old together. What you have to have is balance. And I think it's always good to have a couple of guys on the bench who have been there, who know what it's like to be in the playoffs, know what it's like to, you know, I mean, if we look at, say, for instance, the Jazz staff, all right? Mm-hmm. Same thing, inexperience.
Yeah.
They're growing, and the team's growing. I think they should have a nice 60-year-old assistant coach there. Look at Popovich. You know his assistant coach is the guy from Italy, sits next to him.
Yeah.
All right? He's known as the Johnny Wooden of Italy.
Ettore Messina, yeah, right? Yeah.
Ettore Messina. He's the heir apparent. You know, I think there's nothing like old heads. So, you know, that would be. And by the way, I'd do the same thing at the U.
Sure.
I think the U needs an older head on the bench. Somebody there who can relate to the players, relate to the game, you know, and be able to say, I remember me. I always felt good because I had Jerry Sloan and I had, you know, I had very smart players. But I can remember Richard Kelly coming to me and saying, Coach, we need a day off. We don't need more work. And I'd say, Rich, you're right. Because, you know, I was like most coaches. We were slipping. We're in the playoffs. Hey, we got to work harder. We got to practice longer. We got to do this. And he said, Coach, we need a day off. You know, you want to see a film? We need a day off. He was right. You know,
let's take a final timeout. We'll come back with a final segment with Frank Layden in studio with us today. Frank is dispensing life advice. I'll remind you that I'll be at Shields tomorrow, and I'll also remind you he and the Jazz are being honored as Distinguished Utahns next Tuesday, June the 14th, down at Vivint Smart Home Arena. I would be down myself, but I'll be calling a Real Salt Lake game
yeah,
that
sure.
night.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
I got work. Yeah. You know
yeah,
it is.
You quit your job. This is important. You know what I mean? There's going to be a lot of Real Salt Lake soccer games, but this is only one dinner. This is only once they're going to do
this.
Tell
my boss and see what he says.
Well, we can straighten him out, too.
All right. You know? So anyway, information, if you want to go down to the dinner, all the benefits from the dinner, all the proceeds go to benefit high school scholarships in the state of Utah for academics. And this isn't even for sports. It's for academics and community service. So 801-707-7968. Do you know Adam Silver at all? Have you met Adam Silver?
No, I've talked to him on the phone, yes.
But you knew Stern pretty well, you and Stern.
David Stern and I were not only professionally linked, but we consider ourselves good friends. I'll tell you how good.
Okay.
He called me up about 6 months before he announced his retirement. And he said, Frank, I'm retiring, and I know you retired. You seem to be very happy. What advice can you give me? You know, and here's a guy who, you know, he's on the board of directors, the trustees of Columbia University. You know, I have Columbia Insurance. So anyway, he's, you know, he is a very smart guy. And I told him, I said, you got to have a game plan. You can't play golf every day, you know. And he plays tennis. You can't play tennis every day. You think in the first you can, but then you'll look for other things. I said, put down what you want to do. You know, whether it's travel or share it with your wife. You know, he took it very serious. And a year later, he said, I found what I have to do. And this is interesting.
Yeah.
He lives up in Greenwich, Connecticut. He said, I went down into Manhattan. He said, I found an office. I hired my old secretary from the NBA back. He said, and I opened a business. He said, I missed getting up in the morning, getting dressed, and taking the train down to New York or taking a limo down to New York. He said, and so I've opened a consulting business. He said, I work as long as I want. I own the business. I don't answer to anyone. He said, but this is what I want to do. You know, something, you know, I always think of athletes who it's so hard to leave playing when your playing days are over.
Sure.
What do I do now? There's no practices to go to, no games.
But that time comes for everybody because Father Time's undefeated.
Unfortunately, in sports, you know, athletes – they bow out when other young men are just arriving.
In their prime, right.
In their prime, yes. Yeah. And that's difficult. That's why I used to emphasize to the players so much to study and prepare yourself when this is over. You're not going to be able to sell soap anymore. Once it's over, there's only a couple of guys who can sell things after their career is over. So, you know, and there's only so room for so many broadcasters. So the rest is what are you going to do with your life If you're not happy, you're going to be a miserable husband, father, whatever. So, and you should have fun. Maybe go into coaching, refereeing, whatever it might be.
Broadcasting. Some of those coaches go into broadcasting.
Some of them.
Hubie did.
Yes.
Hubie's great at it.
Hubie's the best.
Yeah. He's terrific
yes,
at it.
Yes, he is. And he enjoys it. And he's 80 now, so I know that he loves it, or he could certainly work away.
You and Hubie are two of the youngest 80-year-old guys I
well,
know.
Well, we were roommates in college.
Yeah.
And we were always arguing about baseball. And we used to run a little scam, all right? Probably the NCAA would arrest us if we do it now. But we used, during the World Series, we used to go around, particularly where the seniors were, and go to the dorms and collect money, all right, from them. And what you did was, if you bet a dollar, it was a dollar bet, okay? If you bet $5, you could win $6. And this is what you had to do. Think about this, Bill. You had to pick three players who would get six hits. Sounds easy in the world. In any game, we do it game by game.
Yeah,
and you could take any player on either of the teams. You'd say, "Gee, that sounds pretty easy, huh?" I mean, yeah, three players to get six hits. Watch next year.
Yeah, it's always invariably yeah. in baseball. There's always that one guy that was a 260 hitter during the season
yeah.
that lights it up in the World Series. Yeah. I remember years ago the Braves, Mark Lemke.
Yeah,
and Lemke was an MVP yeah. one year.
Well, or you get guys who you know are great hitters but don't hit in the World Series, or they hit, they're out. You know, one guy gets 2 for 4, the other guy gets 1 for 3, the other guy gets 1 for 4. You know, so you end up with 4 hits instead of 6. 6 is hard to get. So Hubie and I made a little money doing that.
Last thing I want to ask you, it's not David Stern anymore, but if Adam Silver were to call you up on the phone today and say, Frank, I need a suggestion from you. I want to make my league better next year. I'm going to impose some sort of a change to the game, be it a rule change or something else. What would you do to make the game, the NBA game, better if Adam Silver asked you?
The game doesn't change. The players change.
Okay.
You know, the game has been the same. The game's too long. All right. But they want to sell beer.
Yeah.
So they'd play for 3 hours, 4 hours if they could. All right. The game's too long. The season's too long. I think they should play 2 halves with a break in the middle to let the players pull themselves together. Part of this series that we have right now is we are looking at two fatigued teams who were in the playoffs last year. Played all the way into June, you know. Then they make personal appearances and everything. They come back into the season. They wanted to win 70-plus games, 73 games. You know, the East was easy for Cleveland, you know. And so look at the way they went through the playoffs. I would suggest that they shorten the season and maybe even shorten the games. I don't know. I think the fans would get better. The year that we had the shortened season, the quality of play went up, and the cost to the fans was a lot less.
Well, you know they won't ever shorten it because of the dollar, but do you think that break in the middle could help?
Well, I'll tell you what. Pat Riley and I had a suggestion about that. We said, let's have a season that starts and we play 30 games, all right, until the middle of December. Then we take the top teams in the East, all right, and we take eight teams in the East or 6, all right, and we take 6 or 8 teams in the West. And we have to make up this money because the Christmas time is the downtime in the NBA. All right? They try to build it up with the Christmas Day games. People are spending their money in other places. It's kind of, now the colleges are playing the tournaments and everything else. And then what I do is during that time, play a tournament, a Christmas tournament between the East and the West, 8 teams or 6 teams on each side, if you want 6 or 8, doesn't matter. Have good prizes like Mercedes-Benz as to the winning team. You know, to each player. That would be nothing. You know,
sure.
You know, give each player a Mercedes-Benz who wins the championship. And then the other teams could practice and trade and scrimmage with each other and get themselves better and then start a second half. Little minor leagues used to do that and start the second half of the season. 30 games, Christmas tournament, 30 more games, all right? And it would shorten the season. And when the NCAA Final Four, basketball fever, March Madness ends, the playoffs start the next day, you know, and get it going. Shorten the season, make up the money with clever television things during this midseason playoff, and go from there. I would also build up the minor leagues.
Yeah.
The D League should be like baseball, like AAA is in baseball, and start developing our talent. If they're going to be leaving school early the way they are, and we're going to be counting on getting kids from Europe and Asia and others to bring them in and play, we've got to have places to work with the players. And I don't care, you know, whether you're Bumgardner came from the minor leagues. You know, players in Major League Baseball, you know, we saw Trout here. What's his name? Cole, the kid.
Calhoun.
Cole Calhoun, you know, he played here. There's nothing wrong with developing your talent. We're trying to develop it on the fly. You mentioned all of the coaches we have. I can teach shooting. I can teach dribbling. When I was coaching, I wanted to do those things.
Yeah.
I don't want other people doing things that affected my job. That's what they paid me for, you know. But a lot of people feel the more people I'm over, I guess the more powerful I am. I think in a lot of ways the players are overcoached. First of all, what you have to do is recognize where their weaknesses are and then develop them from there. And I think we have to do it at a different level. Pay the big guys a little less money and pay the guys that are in the minor leagues enough money to play what would be AAA basketball. And then encourage kids to stay in school. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in.
It's been a semi-pleasure, Bill. I want to congratulate you again.
Hey, Frank, by the way.
You do a great job.
Nobody was listening.
Nobody was listening anyway. Barbara was listening.
Barbara, thank you for listening.
We put her asleep about a half hour ago. Hey, God bless. Stay healthy. Go Utes. Go Jazz.
Go Real.
Go Wildcats. What are the Bulls up in Logan?
Aggies.
The Aggies.
Go Real.
Go Real. Yeah, yeah. I'm happy that there's room for everybody to be successful. There really is. Remember the year that the Jazz first made the playoffs?
Yeah.
1984. What else happened that year?
BYU won a national championship.
Exactly. Yeah. It didn't interfere.
No.
We both enjoyed it.
Thanks, Frank.
God bless.
Frank Layden. He'll be honored along with the Utah Jazz next week at Vivint Smart Home Arena. The 23rd annual Distinguished UTON benefit in the gala benefiting high school seniors.